your shipboard computer, welcoming you back on board the starship Heart of Gold. We are currently heading away from planet Earth on improbability drive, and all systems are just tickety-boo. Here we are again, happy as can be.
Okay. Well, guys, you must be so amazingly glad to see me, you can't even find words to tell me what a cool fruit I am.
What?
I know how you feel. I'm so great I get tongue-tied talking to myself. Hey, it's good to see you, Ford and Monkey Man.
Listen, I come from an ancient and distinguished race.
Of hairdressers.
Thank you, Ford.
Hey, Zaphod!
Hey, Ford, put it there.
Hey!
And there.
Hey!
And there.
Hey!
And there.
Hey.
Whoa!
But look, how did you escape from the hag and then on?
Simple, I got lucky.
How did you get this ship back?
I got lucky.
But how did you find us?
I got your towel.
What?
Mailed by meteorite. Hey, that was a really neat trick. How did you do it?
Do what?
Get the towel fossilized so when the planet blows up, 2 million years later, it gets hurled off into space and picked up by the improbability drive.
Hey?
How did you work it all out?
We didn't. I just dropped the towel.
Oh, so you got lucky too. That's cool. Hey, man, we are going to need a lot of luck where we are going next.
Where's that?
I'll tell you when you've asked me what happened on the Frogstar.
What's the Frogstar?
I thought you'd never ask.
Many stories are told of Zaphod Beeblebrox's journey to the Frogstar. 10% of them are 95% true, 14% of them are 65% true, 35% of them are only 5% true, and all the rest of them are told by Zaphod Beeblebrox. Only one wholly accurate account exists, and that is locked in a trunk in the attic of Zaphod's favorite mother, Mrs. Alice Beeblebrox of 10 to the 8th Astral Crescent, Zuvruzelchester, Betelgeuse 5. Though countless people have tried cajolery, bribery, or threats to get hold of it, she has carefully guarded it from all eyes for many years, waiting for what she calls the right price. But one fairly well-documented episode is referred to by Beeblebroxologists as the "Hey, Rooster, I've just had this really hoopy idea" incident.
Hey, Rooster, I've just had this really hoopy idea. We're in this wrecked building, right?
Right.
And the building's in this really amazing force bubble, right?
Right.
And the force bubble's flying through interstellar space, right?
Right.
And there are 7 Frogstar fighters towing us at about hyperspeed 12 to the Frogstar, right?
It had better be a good idea, Beeblebrox.
Oh, it's a smash! You want to hear it?
Okay.
Let's go to a discotheque.
Are you crazy?
What's the matter? Don't you like discotheques? Look, I got this free invite some cat was giving out in the street. Here it is.
Ah, I'm with you, Beeblebrox. You reckon we could slide this plastic invite into a door lock, break out of the building, climb into one of the Frogstar fighters, and then maybe overpower all the guards with this terrifying, small, plastic card?
Look at the card, will you?
Wormhole Disco. Loudest noise on Betelgeuse. Free body debit for one night only. What's a body debit?
Oh, you have been roughing it for too long, Rooster. You missed out on progressive consumerism. Look, an old-style credit card, you press the panel on the card, it makes an instant debit on your bank account and an instant credit to the shop's account, right?
I prefer hard cash. If you can't scratch a window with it, I don't accept it.
Yeah, but get this. Body debit means you press this card and it debits all your molecules from where you're standing and your body goes into credit somewhere else.
In the disco.
Right.
Escape.
Yeah.
It had better be a good disco.
Listen, if it was a good disco, they wouldn't have to give away body debit cards. Right, Rooster, we are going to groove our way out of here. We did it!
What did you say?
I said we did it!
What did you say?
What?
I said, what did you say?
I can't hear!
What?
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 Hi there, baby.
Hi there.
What's a dance?
Oh, do I look like I want to dance?
You look like it to me.
I must have got my wrong body on.
Suit yourself, then. Hi there, baby. You
want
to
dance?
Beeblebrox, all these dancers, they're robots.
They're just to make the place look crowded, give it some atmosphere.
But there aren't any real people here at all.
So what's new? What's up?
I just walked past this nozzle in the wall. It's spraying the smell of hot sweat over everything.
Oh, yeah, okay, let's get out of here. Can you see a door?
Yeah. It's right in the far corner.
Let's go.
You cannot go.
You must have a good time.
I'm trying to have a good time. I'm trying to go.
Turn up the music.
Turn up the music.
Turn up the music.
Turn up the music.
Oh.
You must have a good time.
You must die.
The worst good time I ever had.
Still, we're free.
There you are. Splendid.
You! Hey, man, how did you get to be here?
Me? I came the simple way, down the stairs.
Down the stairs? To Ursa Minor? Hey, you must be unbelievably fit.
I'm afraid you're not on, Ursa Minor. We didn't let you out of the building. This has all been a little in-flight entertainment.
You call that entertainment?
Not for you, for me. Well, I'm afraid I must leave you now.
Oh, and just when I was really getting to dislike you.
I feel very privileged to have been able to bring a little unnecessary unpleasantness into your life, Mr. Beeblebrox, sir.
Fine.
Oh, I wonder if you'd like to sign an autograph for me.
An autograph? You must be several light years out of your skull, baby.
Could I have a photo of you here, if you could just see your way.
Oh, come on, go suck a neutron star, will you?
Please, okay, have a look at this one.
Hey, that's quite a nice pic. Let's see it. Yeah, okay, let's look with deep anger and resentment. Say for people. Okay.
Thank you. It's not for my daughter, you understand. It's for me. I have to put it in the Frogstar record office attached to a statement saying that you went into the vortex of your own free will.
Baby, I think there's some problem with your respiration.
Oh, what?
You're breathing.
That's not a problem.
It is from where I'm standing. Here, let me tie a knot in your neck.
If you try and strangle me, Beeblebrox, you'll regret it.
Yeah, not half as much as you will.
Well, don't say I didn't warn you.
Rooster, did you see that? The guy vanished whilst I had my hands round his neck. Oh! I think I've broken my thumb on my other thumb. Rooster? Rooster, where are you?
Beeblebrox, you are on your own now. You have arrived on the Frogstar.
Hey, what? Who are you?
I am Gargavar. I am the custodian of the Total Perspective Vortex.
Hi.
Hello?
Why can't I see you? Why aren't you here?
I am here. At least my mind is. My body wanted to come, but it's a bit busy at the moment. Things to do, people to see. You know how it is with bodies.
I thought I did.
I hope it's gone in for surgery. The way it's been living recently, it must be on its last elbows.
Elbows? You mean its last legs?
I know what I mean.
Hey, wild.
So you are to be put into the vortex, yes?
Well, this cat's in no hurry, you know. I can just slouch about, taking a look at the local scenery, you know.
Have you seen the local scenery?
No. Okay, well, I'll just slouch about then.
No, the vortex is ready for you now. You must come. Follow me.
Yeah. How am I meant to do that?
I'll hum for you. Just follow the humming.
Okay, anything for a weird life?
The universe, as has been observed before, is an unsettlingly big place, a fact which, for the sake of a quiet life, most people tend to ignore. Many would happily move to somewhere rather smaller of their own devising, and this is what most beings, in fact, do. For instance, in one corner of the Eastern Galactic Arm lies the great forest planet Oglaroon, the entire intelligent population of which lives permanently in one fairly small and crowded nut tree, in which tree they are born, live, fall in love, carve tiny speculative articles in the bark on the meaning of life, the futility of death and the importance of birth control, fight a few very minor wars, and eventually die strapped to the underside of some of the less accessible outer branches. In fact, The only Oglaroonians who ever leave their tree at all are those who are hurled out for the heinous crime of wondering whether any of the other trees might be capable of supporting life at all, or indeed be anything other than illusions brought on by eating too many Oglanuts. Exotic though this behaviour may seem, there is no life form in the galaxy not in some way guilty of the same thing, which is why the total perspective vortex is as horrific as it undoubtedly is. For when you are put in the vortex, you are given just one momentary glimpse of the size of the entire unimaginable infinity of creation, along with a tiny little marker saying, "You are here."
Hey, man, what was that?
A man being put in the vortex, I'm afraid. We're very close to it now.
Hey, it sounds really bad. Couldn't we maybe go to a party or something for a while, think it over?
For all I know, I'm probably at one. My body, that is. It goes to a lot of parties without me. Says I only get in the way. Hey, okay.
I can see why it wouldn't want to come here. This place is the dismalest. Looks like a bomb's hit it, you know?
Several have. It's a very unpopular place. The vortex is in the heavy steel bunker ahead of you.
The universe does that to a guy?
The whole infinite universe. The infinite suns, the infinite distances between them, and yourself, an invisible dot on an invisible dot. Infinitely small.
Infinitely small. Infinitely small.
Hey, I'm Zaphod Beeblebrox, man, you know?
That is precisely the point.
It doesn't look like any kind of a vortex to me.
It isn't. It's just the lift. Enter.
I got to get myself in the right frame of mind for this.
There is no right frame of mind.
You really know how to make a guy feel inadequate.
I don't. The vortex does. There. The vortex. The total perspective vortex. Enter, Beeblebrox. Enter the vortex. Enter the vortex.
Okay.
The vortex derives its picture of the whole universe on the principle of extrapolated matter analyses. To explain, since every piece of matter in the universe is in some way affected by every other piece of matter in the universe, it is in theory possible to extrapolate the whole of creation. Every galaxy, every sun, every planet, their orbits, their composition, and their economic and social history from, say, one small piece of fairy cake. The man who invented the total perspective vortex did so, basically, in order to annoy his wife. Trintragula, for that was his name, was a dreamer, a speculative thinker, or, as his wife would have it, an idiot. And she would nag him incessantly about the utterly inordinate amount of time he would spend staring out into space, or mulling over the mechanics of safety pins, or doing spectrographic analyses of pieces of fairy cake. Have some sense of proportion, she would say 38 times a day. And so he built the total perspective vortex just to show her. And in one end he plugged the whole of reality, as extrapolated from a fairy cake, and in the other end he plugged his wife, so that when he turned it on she saw in one instant the whole infinity of creation and herself in relation to it. To Trintragula's horror, the shock annihilated her brain. But to his satisfaction, he realized he had conclusively proved that if life is going to exist in a universe this size, the one thing it cannot afford to have is a sense of proportion. And it is into this vortex that Zaphod Beeblebrox has been put, and from which a few seconds later, he emerges.
Hi.
Beeblebrox, you're...
Fine. Could I have a drink, please?
You've been in the vortex?
You saw me, kid.
And you saw the whole infinity of creation?
The lot, baby. It's a real neat place, you know that?
And you saw yourself in relation to it all?
Yeah.
And what did you experience?
It just told me what I knew all the time.
I'm a really great guy. Didn't I tell you, baby? I am Zaphod Beeblebrox!
Is it really true that Zaphod Beeblebrox's ego is as large as the universe? Does this actually have any bearing on anything else in the story, or indeed on anything else at all? Has everyone totally forgotten about the increasingly mysterious Zarniwoop last heard of taking an intergalactic cruise in his office? Is it worth hanging on to find out the answers to these exasperating questions? Find out in the next unedifying episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
In that episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Peter Jones was the book. Simon Jones was Arthur Dent. Jeffrey McGiven was Ford Prefect. Mark Wing Davy was Zaphod Beeblebrox. Alan Ford was Rooster. David Tate was Eddie and the Frogstar prison relation officer. And Valentine Dial was Gargravar. Radiophonic sound and music was by Paddy Kingsland of the BBC Radiophonic Workshop. The programme was written by Douglas Adams and produced by Jeffrey Perkins. Information about package holidays on the Frogstar can be found in the leaflet Sun, Sand and Suffering on the Most Totally Evil Place in the Galaxy.
Is that a piece of fairy cake? My stomach's just completely out to lunch.
Het Wilgenportaal, dat is een stukje lopen. En dat is over vers gelegde houtsnippers. Lieve luisteraar, als je een collage wil horen van vogels en het gezoem van een hele grote windmolen. Vliegtuigje hier en daar. Nou, onderweg naar het Wilgenportaal kom je dan ook nog allemaal mooie kunstwerken tegen. Onder andere deze met allemaal reageerbuisjes die in een sierlijk buigend metalen ding hangen. Heel veel flesjes en dat zijn monsters. Genummerde monsters van wateren in Nederland. Die hebben ze kunnen bemachtigen. En een prachtig kunstwerk van gemaakt. Levend kunstwerk, dat is al heel anders dan in het begin. Ja, het is ver lopen naar de eerste officiële content. We komen in de buurt.
Extra repressie, zo van, Atatürk was zeker hier. Want dat kan maar angst van drankverbod, drugsverbod.
The sun you sent away. exceeded the sky. Wider and wider spread the streak of dawn. Whiter grew the pallid silver of the dew, more lifeless the sickle of the moon, more vocal the forest. People began to get up, and in the open, the sounds of snorting, the rustling, and even the thrill, angry neighing of horses crowded together and at variance about something, grew more and more frequent. "Hold on, plenty of time. Hungry?" said the old hunter, quickly opening the creaking gate. "Where are you going?" he shouted, threateningly raising his arm at the mare that was pushing through the gate. The keeper, Nestor, wore a short Cossack coat with an ornamental leather girdle, had a whip slung over his shoulder, and a hunk of bread wrapped in a cloth stuck in his girdle. He carried a bridle in his arms. The horses were not at all frightened or offended at the horseman's sarcastic tone. They pretended that it was all the same to them, and moved leisurely away from the gate. Only one old brown mare, with a thick mane, laid back an ear and quickly turned her back on him, a small filly standing behind her, and not at all concerned in the matter, took this opportunity to whinny and kick out at a horse that happened to be near. "Now then," shouted the keeper still louder and more sternly, and he went to the opposite corner of the yard. Of all the horses in the enclosure, there were about 100 of them, a piebald gelding standing by himself in a corner under the penthouse and licking an oak post with half-closed eyes, displayed least impatience. It is impossible to say what flavor the piebald gelding found in the post, but his expression was furious and hopeful while he licked. "Stop that!" shouted the groom, drawing nearer to him and putting the saddle and the glossy saddlecloth on the manure heap beside. Piebald gelding stopped licking and without moving gave Nestor a long look. The gelding did not laugh, nor grow angry, nor frown, but his whole belly heaved with a profound sigh, and he turned away. Horseman put his arm round the yielding's neck and place the bridle on him. "What are you sighing for?" said Nestor. Gelding switched his tail as if to say, "Nothing in particular, jester." Nestor put a saddlecloth and saddle on him, and this caused Gelding to lay back his ears, probably to express dissatisfaction. But he was only called a good-for-nothing for it, and his saddle curse was heightened. At this, the gelding blew himself out. But a finger was thrust into his mouth and a knee in his stomach, so that he had to let out his breath. In spite of this, when the saddlecloth was being buckled on again, laid back ears and even looked round. Though he knew it would do no good, he considered it necessary to show it was disagreeable to him and that he would always express his dissatisfaction with it. When he was settled, he thrust forward his swollen of food and began champing his bit, too, for some reason of his own, for he ought to have to know by that time that a bit cannot have any flavor at all. Nestor mounted the gelding by the short stirrup, unwound his long whip, straightened his coat from under his knee, seated himself in a manner particular to coachmen, huntsmen, horsemen, and jerked reins. The gelding lifted his head to show his readiness to go where ordered, but did not move. He knew that before starting there would be much shouting, and that Nestor, from the seat on his back, would give to Vaska, the other groom, and to the horses. And Nestor did shout, "Vaska! Hello, Vaska! Have you let out the brood mares? Where are you going, you devil? Now then, are you asleep? Open the gate, let the brood mares get out first," and so on. The gate creaked. Vaska, cross and sleepy, stood at the gate post, holding his horse by the bridle and letting the other horses pass out. The horses followed one another and stepped carefully over the straw, smelling at it. Fillies, yearling colts with their manes and tails cut, suckling foals, and mares in full carrying, their burden heedfully passed one by one through the gateway. The fillies sometimes crowded together in twos and threes, heads across one another's backs, and hitting their hooves against the gate, to which they received a rebuke from the grooms every time. The foals sometimes darted under the legs of the wrong mares, and neighed loudly in response to the short whinny of their own mothers. A playful filly, directly she had got out of the gate, bent her head sideways, kicked up her hind legs, and squealed. But all the same, she did not dare to run ahead of old dappled Sulbia, who at slow and heavy pace, swinging her backside, marched as usual ahead of all the other horses. In a few minutes, the enclosure that had been so animated became deserted. The posts stood gloomily under the empty penthouse, and only trampled straw mixed with manure was to be seen. Used as he was to that desolate sight, it probably depressed the piebald gelding. As if making a bow, he slowly lowered his head again, sighed as deeply as his tightly drawn turf would allow, and hobbling along on his stiff and crooked legs, shambled after the herd, bearing old Nestor on his bony back. I know that as soon as we get out of the road, he will begin to strike a light and smoke his wooden pipe with his brass mountings and his little chain, thought the gelding. I am glad of it, because early in the morning, when it is new, I like that smell. It reminds me of much that was pleasant. But it is annoying that when his pipe is between his teeth, the old man always began to swagger and sings himself somebody and sits sideways, always sideways, and that side hurts. However, it cannot be helped. Suffering for the pressure of others is nothing new to me. I have even begun to find a certain equine pleasure in it. Let him swagger, the poor fellow. Of course he can only do that when he is alone and no one sees him. Let him sit sideways, thought the gelding, and stepping carefully on his crooked legs, he went along the middle of the road.
Good Lord, send me an angel down. Can't you spare no angel? You whisper your teasing brown. Oh, this new Way of loving. Well, I swear to God, it must be best. Cause these Detroit women won't let Mr. Jack White rest. There was a crowd down the corner. Oh, I wonder why could it be? And one thing but the women just trying to get to me. One of them half chemic yellow. Oh, one of them Detroit brown. But that Southwest dark skin was sure to turn my damper down. Well, I got two women. Oh, you can't tell them apart. I got one in my bosom and the other one is in my heart. Oh, that one in my bosom, oh, she live in Tennessee. But that one in my heart, well, she don't give a darn for me. And I used to say, married women, y'all the sweetest women ever born. I'ma change that thing, you better leave married women alone. Well, they'll tell you that they love you. Love you that whole life. Grab a man on the corner and they tell that same lie twice. Oh, ticket agent, ticket agent. Which way did my baby go? Tell me what she looks like. I'll tell you what road she's on. She's a long, tall mama. Oh, mine half from the ground. She's a tailor-made mama and she ain't no hand-me-down. Oh, my mother once told me when I was a boy playing the mumbly pegs, don't drink no black cow's milk and don't you eat no black hen's eggs. A black man give you a dollar and he won't think it's nothing strange. A white man give you a dollar, expect back 95 cents change. Good Lord, oh, let me an angel down. Can't you spare no angel, you will spare your cheese and brown. For this new, well, loving, well, I swear to God it must be best. Cause these Detroit women won't let Mr. Jack White rest. Dirty ground when I know you're not around. Shiny tops and soda pops. When I hear your lips make a sound. When I hear your lips make a sound. 30 notes in the mailbox. Well, tell you that I'm coming home. And I think I'm gonna stick around for a while. Say you're not alone. For a while, say you're not alone. Hey. If you can hear a piano fall, you can hear me coming down the hall. Fucking just in your pretty voice, I don't think I need to see at all. Don't think I need to see at all. Soft hair in a velvet tongue, I'm gonna give you what you get for me. And every breath that is in your lungs is a tiny little gift to me. And a tiny little gift to me. Hey. Hey. I need to feel so bad till the sun went down. Then I come home, no wonder if my own microphone can tell you what he loves the most. And you know why you love at all if you're thinking of the Holy Ghost. If you're thinking of the Holy Ghost.
Bye.